place in Moscow between him and Syrian Defense Minister Ali Mahmoud Abbas, with the participation of Iranian and Russian counterparts. The Turkish minister said things will not be solved in one meeting after 11 years of strained relations. However, he says both sides are aware that through dialogue they can find common ground.
We got together with the Syrian defense minister for the first time in 11 years. It was an important meeting. Dialogue is the key. Both sides acknowledge this. It is, of course, not possible to resolve everything at once. Naturally, the parties may have maximalist demands, but we are trying to turn those demands into reasonable ones.
Damascus says its main demand is for Turkish troops to leave the Syrian territory, with officials repeating in every meeting that the road to normalization can only be paved by the withdrawal of thousands of Turkish troops from the Arab country. This point was again raised in last week's meeting and stressed by the Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdat. He said it is impossible to talk about normalization as the Turkish army continues to occupy Syria's northern areas. But Turkey says its presence in Syria is aimed at fighting terrorism and creating a safe environment for the Syrian people, as well as protecting shared borders, which is Turkey's main concern. Turkey is also worried from a new round of clashes, which could lead to a new wave of refugees.
Both sides have their demands. The Turkish side wants security guarantees. They don't want to see any type of autonomous structure in the northeast of Syria that is led by the YPG group. This is a major security concern for Turkey. And Turkey also has almost 4 million Syrian refugees that it would like to slowly see repatriated in the future. We're still far apart on the demands from both sides for normalization. But this doesn't mean that both sides can't come together on a transactional basis to try to further issues that are of mutual interest.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has hoped that he can reach an agreement with Syria before the upcoming presidential and parliamentary election. Sending refugees back is one of the Turkish people's main concerns, and opposition parties are playing the card of Syrian refugees against Erdogan in their campaigns. A normalization of relations between Ankara and Damascus will definitely ease the pressure on Turkey, whether regarding the refugee crisis or armed groups operating in Syria that Turkey sees as terrorists. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Iran has successfully tested a homegrown plane engine and its control system. The engine was built by experts of MAPNA Industrial Group using the reverse engineering method. The testing process was observed by Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi, who was visiting the company on the occasion of the International Workers' Day. Raisi visited an exhibition on MAPNA Group's technological achievements in the fields of thermal and renewable energy power plants, oil and gas, rail transportation, air engines, electric cars, and so forth. During his visit, the Iranian president praised the company, saying he is proud of the efforts made by skilled workers and experts of MAPNA.
We must be proud of this level of work, endeavor, creativity, innovation, skill, knowledge, and technology. Truly, this company is one of the industrial groups that have made us proud. It has also made our country more powerful. They have accomplished a lot, and they have lots of important projects that will be completed in the future.
Raisi described the achievements as significant, saying the company's productions are quality enough to be sold on regional and global markets. In 2022, the MAPNA Group won an award for being one of the top three Iranian exporters of the year. In July, the company's technology and engineering exports topped 2.5 billion euros.
The major achievements of the MAPNA Industrial Group have once again proved that sanctions cannot hinder Iran's development. Iranians have time and again shown that where there is a will, there is a way. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Paris was on fire for May Day, International Workers' Day, once again. Hundreds were arrested, hundreds were hurt, and tear gas was a constant for hours. The demonstration route was littered with broken glass and fires after cops repeatedly intervened in the march. Protesters targeted banks, insurance vendors, real estate agencies, and sexist advertising. And then the end of the march turned into a multi-hour battle royale.
Tear gas is sadly typical of how our government deals with political demonstrations. French democracy has been tarnished worldwide and appears ridiculous, as it's clearly not based on representative democracy.
Over 2 million people marched nationwide as unions declared May Day the 13th major day of protest this year against a 2-year hike to the pension age, which was rammed into law by executive decree last month. The undemocratic proclamation of the law, combined with the shocking police brutality, had many French people questioning their country's democratic bona fides.
France allows for demonstrations, but the problem is that police don't allow it. We saw that with the yellow vests, and we have seen it again from the very start of the pension protests this year.
Macron has to stop showing such contempt for the people. As a yellow vest, I promise that we will never stop fighting for a real democracy. We want referendums and public participation, while Macron has fear for the people.
International Workers' Day began in Chicago in 1886 with the fight for an 8-hour workday. It wouldn't be implemented in the West until after their political and financial elites forced World War I, which was largely an effort to maintain monarchical privileges and to forestall socialist-inspired reforms.
Protesters insist they can apply enough pressure on the president to get the unpopular law revoked, something protests also forced in 2006. Press TV's cameraman was hit by a tear gas grenade fired by police seconds before the start of a live interview from the demonstration. It appears like a clear case of police targeting media, as tear gas is normally shot high into the air. The cameraman was not badly hurt, as the projectile only exploded after it ricocheted off his leg. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
It goes under the technical name of European Stability Mechanism, or ESM. It is the Eurozone bailout fund designed to help euro area countries in severe financial distress. The first ESM version was devised in 2012 following Greece's default on its own bonds, which brought the Eurozone at risk of breaking apart, with economic instability spreading across the old continent. As Europe faces several challenges to stay afloat, the European Union must devise mechanisms to balance its member states economically. The European Stability Mechanism is a rescue fund for EU member countries that have lost or risk losing market access. In practical terms, it grants conditional financial assistance to states that are on the verge of bankruptcy to mitigate the contagion risks in the bloc.
We, of course, need to remain vigilant. Economic uncertainty remains high and we face numerous headwinds. Events in the US support the EU's choice to apply the Basel Prudential Standards to all our banks, not just the largest one.
In early 2021, the European Commission and all members of the bloc signed a new agreement amending the previous ESM in a way that it prevents small crises from escalating. On Friday, European Economy Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni called on Rome to stop dragging its heels over ratification of the reform. As of today, all EU member countries have ratified the reform, except Italy.
By holding out on ratifying the reform, Italy is maybe attempting to fetch a better deal on the upcoming reform of the EU's set of fiscal rules. Some are even suggesting that parties in Italy's ruling coalition are caught in some sort of political skirmishes over this issue.
On several occasions, Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has criticized the ESM reform, arguing that the bailout funds should be used also as a vehicle for growth. Some time ago, the leader of one of the right-leaning coalition government's parties, the League's Matteo Salvini, said that approving the ESM changes would mean the ruining of lives for millions of Italians and the end of Italy's national sovereignty on budget issues.
Creating wealth to tackle poverty is our top priority, as Italy has already sold many of its strategic assets and made a huge amount of debt. We must focus on investing now.
While Brussels is urging Italy's approval of the European Stability Mechanism, the examination of the bills for its ratification has been at a standstill in the Italian Parliament for almost a month. Max Civili, Rome.
The Taliban-led Foreign Ministry of Afghanistan on Friday reacted to a recent UN resolution slamming the Taliban's decision to bar local women from working for the United Nations, saying this is an internal social matter of Afghanistan that has nothing to do with foreign states. The Taliban statement said they remain committed to ensuring rights of Afghan women and stressed that diversity must be respected and not be politicized. Afghan women rights activists and experts said the ruling Taliban need to engage with the international community on the matter and also listen to the words of the Afghan people on such issues.
Since Afghanistan is a member of the UN and given the current economic and humanitarian situation, the Taliban need to engage with the international community and take the issue seriously. When they say the issue of Afghan women is an internal matter, they must listen to what Afghans say. They should be open to ordinary Afghans, elites, impartial advocates, and clerics. Such steps are for the better of both Taliban and the Afghan people.
The Afghan people said the global community and the Taliban should reach an agreement over the matter that best serves the rights and interests of Afghans.
Our demands from the Taliban and the international community is to uphold the rights of women. We expect the issue of Afghan women not to be politicized. Afghan people also need a good economy, healthcare, and education. The Taliban and global community should work closer to address all needs of Afghans, joining hands on the benefit of Afghans.
The UN Security Council approved a resolution Thursday calling on Afghanistan's Taliban rulers to swiftly reverse their restrictions on women and girls. The UN is also reviewing its presence in Afghanistan following the Taliban's ban on female UN workers in the war-torn country. Afghan people are in a dire situation as they struggle with humanitarian and economic crisis. They are appealing to both the Taliban and the global community to help ease their conditions and protect their rights. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Ancient maps and antique atlases on view. The collection of maps that date back to 500 BC illustrates how the name of the Persian Gulf has stayed the same through the ages.
One of the most important issues in Iranology is the names of different parts of Iran and how they have changed since antiquity. And the name of the Persian Gulf is also part of our studies and among the most important topics of research. As you can see in all of these historic maps that date back to 500 BC, many names have changed, but the name of the Persian Gulf, or Sinus Persicus, has remained the same.
This extensive collection of 200 ancient maps and atlases was recently archived by the Iranology Foundation. On the occasion of National Persian Gulf Day, the foundation curated this public exhibition not just for enthusiasts and researchers, but also for the education of the younger generation.
On the occasion of Persian Gulf Day, we decided to share our maps and atlases that contain a treasure trove of information about Iran and the Persian Gulf. We've invited university students and researchers, and we've also held workshops to inform visitors about the region, its name, and the culture of its peoples.
All the maps pertaining to the Islamic Golden Age refer to the body of water in the south of Iran as Sinus Persicus, or the Persian Gulf. The name even appears in the oldest map here, a copy of Claudius Ptolemy's world map, based on the description contained in his Book of Geography, one of the earliest surviving manuscripts.
April 30th, which is National Persian Gulf Day on the Iranian calendar, is a reminder that the country is steadfast in protecting its interests, and it will also stand firm against any threats to its sovereignty. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Ever since President Emmanuel Macron forced through a 2-year hike to the pension age by decree, neither he nor his ministers can hold public gatherings without protesters drowning out their voices by banging pots and pans. The pan banging has become a public relations nightmare for the ruling politicians, as their every appearance now includes a disruptive and unmistakable reminder of approval ratings which have dropped to near the Yellow Vest era all-time lows.
We know this type of protest is effective because they are constantly getting repressed by police and local mayors. It's clear that mass protests haven't been enough. These casserole pan protests are easy to organize and show how deaf the government is to the people's wishes.
The new form of protest is occurring almost daily and is having a major impact. Citing pension rollback protests as a cause, French government debt was just downgraded by a top global ratings agency. The prime minister told her cabinet to restrict their public appearances to only the necessities. That means government work is being slowed down. But the protesters say that only a total stop to implementing the pension age hike will end the so-called casserole pan protests.
The president and his ministers think that the pension rollback is all wrapped up, but he is finding out that this is not the case. Macron is here at the French football club, but we're here with our casserole pans and our whistles to give him a red card. We will be making noise until he revokes the law.
Huge nationwide demonstrations, along with the usual police repression, are expected on May 1st, International Workers' Day. But the real question is if the protests will continue and be able to force the revocation of an already enacted law, as was the case in 2006.
Words like doubt, fatigue, and depression are being used to describe Macron and his ministers. Macron just wrapped up his 6th year in office, but his next 4 years may be the type of ringing success which no politician would want to hear. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days, by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Freedom or martyrdom was what Palestinian prisoner Sheikh Haider Adnan was seeking. This after once again being illegally imprisoned by the Israeli regime without a trial or charge. Adnan had been imprisoned 20 times by Israel. On Tuesday, he attained martyrdom on the 87th day of his hunger strike. His wife had warned that the Israeli regime wanted to murder him, and it had refused to free him despite his deteriorating health. On this Spotlight, we will take a look at the ramifications of his martyrdom and overall the Palestinian resistance. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Laith Malouf, activist and political commentator out of Beirut. And Khalid Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badal Movement, out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start it off in Beirut with Laith. Sheikh Haider Adnan was a well-known political prisoner and a leader in the Islamic Jihad. What does it mean that this man had to go on several hunger strikes simply to gain his freedom? However, this time it resulted in his martyrdom.
Well, clearly is an indication of how vile and inhumane the Zionist regime is. For your listeners, this was his sixth hunger strike since 2004. And the last time, of course, he was released. And every time he was arrested, he was never charged with any crimes and put under, quote-unquote, administrative detention. Also, for your listeners, this is the seventh Palestinian that dies on a hunger strike since 1970. And it's an indication that, of course, the Palestinian people are willing to sacrifice everything they have for their freedom. And it's also an indication of how cruel and vicious the Zionist colony is and its Western backers are.
Well, Khaled, Sheikh Adnan is the 237th Palestinian prisoner to be killed or died in Israeli jails. I mean, what does this mean that many Palestinians are dying behind Israeli bars? And what does it say about the overall conditions?
Well, basically, what it says is that Israel could carry a criminal and assassination acts against Palestinian prisoners with impunity. I mean, when we say 237 Palestinian prisoners were murdered at the hands of Israelis, we are talking about shot from a, you know, directly shot with live bullets. We are talking about killed in interrogation rooms after being tortured for weeks and months, like in the case of Muhammad al-Khawaja in 1976, or Ibrahim al-Ra'i in 1988, or Mustafa al-Akkawi in 1990. These are Palestinian leaders who were assassinated, and it's premeditated, it's organized crimes that happens while these Palestinian prisoners are in custody and under, torture. Now, in the case of Sheikh Khadr Adnan, Palestinians today, they feel very angry and very sad at the same time, but they are not surprised. They know that Israel have carried this, and they want to actually kill Khadr Adnan. His wife have been saying this repeatedly to Palestinian and Arab media. We have invited her to speak just a couple of weeks ago, and she said that when they came to arrest him, they told her, we are going to blow his head off this time. And the same Palestinian prisoner organizations have warned that Israel is going to kill Sheikh Khadr Adnan, because this time they did not arrest him based on administrative detention law, as they always have done with Sheikh Khadr Adnan. This time they wanted to actually sentence him so they can either remove him from his role, the role that he plays as a national leader in the Palestinian street. So we, have warned that this is what Israel is trying to do. They're trying to kill him, and they did.
Very sad indeed. Well, Laith, actually, Khaled just referred to something that I wanted to bring up, because, first of all, talking about a regime that can arrest and hold people without trial, the so-called administrative detention on the one hand, but even with that, they hadn't charged him yet, Khaled, because you said they wanted to charge him. They hadn't charged him yet. It almost seemed like as if there's such a sense of impunity by the Israeli regime, because they can easily trump up charges. They could easily follow their big brother in Washington with that. But they didn't even bother to do that. They didn't charge him, and he was killed in jail, as if they know there's not going to be any pressure against him or nothing's going to be done. Your take, Laith?
Well, it's clear indication that the quote-unquote international system that was created by the West after World War II is in total disarray. The Zionists know that they have full impunity and protection within those structures, whether it's the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, or the ICC, which are all irrelevant not only to Palestinians but to much of humanity in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. None of these systems can bring justice to the Palestinians or put Israel on trial. Therefore, the only way forward has always been for the Palestinians armed resistance and the liberation through that struggle. And the backing of our Arab and Muslim brothers and our brothers in Africa, Asia, and Latin America will be crucial to that. We should not anymore care about whether Europeans or North Americans look at us as human or care for our feelings. We know already that they don't. So we should not be surprised. And this is something that most Palestinians in the occupied Palestine have already understood and are not waiting for the goodwill of the West. And as we see today, already Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are firing back at the Zionist colony, and we expect resistance to break out in the West Bank any minute also.
Well, Khaled, 45-year-old Sheikh Khader Adnan had spent many years behind bars, as we've been saying, and of course, this was a six-hunger strike. He spoke for other prisoners and demanded the rights of all Palestinian prisoners and even expressed his solidarity with 30,000 prisoners in the United States who went on hunger strikes across California in 2013. It says a lot about his personality. Your thoughts overall about the Sheikh and his strong stance against oppression in general?
Actually, Sheikh Khader Adnan have demonstrated an exceptional ethics and struggle, his, you know, day-to-day struggle. He's a simple worker, he's a baker, and he is not like someone who goes to an office. He actually is a hard-working man and a loving father. And his commitment has been always for the families of the martyrs and the prisoners. And it's well-known fact about his almost daily visits and care for these families. And in his will, when you read his will, you can, it's the only ones that he expressed his commitment to are the families of the martyrs and the prisoners and the wounded. He has always been taking positions when even it's not popular positions. And that's why he was prosecuted and tortured and arrested, not just by Israel, but also by Israel puppets in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority. He has been imprisoned, and they even at one point of time tried to assassinate him and shot directly at him in Nablus and other cities when he goes to the funerals of martyrs or visit the families of the martyrs. Also, he have expressed his solidarity with the Lebanese communist revolutionary prisoner George Ibrahim Abdullah. We've asked him to plant a tree for George Ibrahim Abdullah, and he did. He planted olive trees for George Ibrahim Abdullah. He expressed his solidarity with political prisoners across the world, including in his speeches when he talks about freedom and dignity. He does not limit that just to the Palestinian prisoners, but he talks about it from a truly Arab and Muslim and internationalist, way. And this is a very important values in his persona, as well as his political convictions. He said that my skin and bones are being melting in this hunger strike because I am defending my dignity and my freedom. And dignity is very central, and that's why Palestinians are calling him the martyrs of national dignity and human dignity, because he truly represented that he will not submit to Zionist regime, he will not submit to Zionist torturers, he will not submit to Zionist soldiers. He will fight back, and he will go all the way if martyrdom or freedom. And this is important quality in a true revolutionary Palestinians and, especially prisoners. At the same time...
Sorry to interrupt you. Let me get Lyth back in on this conversation, because we're really limited time-wise. But Lyth, you heard what Khaled said, that he was defending dignity and freedom. I mean, what does it say in general that the only way for him to be free was dealing with this hunger strike? And on the other side, we look at the lack of coverage. This man was on a hunger strike for 86 days. And if we look at overall which television stations or newspapers or other outlets cover it, it's very, very limited. I mean, what does that say about the overall state of affairs in the world?
Well, clearly the Western media is now has lost any credibility and has decided to black out all the stories. Of course, the story of Ukraine is taking over much of that space in the media in the West. But Sheikh Khadr Adnan was known all around the world. I lived in Canada for 20-some-odd years, like Khalid, and I remember the posters with his face plastering the streets of Montreal during his second hunger strike. So we know that the effect of this dignity that Sheikh Khadr Adnan resembled and had a huge effect across the world. And look, the Palestinian people have chosen, have known their place in history, and they know that their struggle is a long one, and they know that the only way that they can get through is through continued resistance all the way. We cannot give the Zionists anything from what they pursue, because we are the native indigenous people of the lands. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are ours. Those Europeans that claim to be Jews and act as Zionists, they do not represent Judaism of Moses of Egypt or the Ten Commandments. Those Christians in Europe and the United States who support Zionism do not represent Jesus of Palestine and the prophet of love and peace. And of course, Muslims who collaborate with the Zionist colony do not represent the prophet Muhammad and his religion of equality and justice. This is our weight of history on our back, and we will continue, like Sheikh Khadr Adnan, to struggle to the last day until there is no more Zionist colony and the liberation of Palestine happens.
Well, Khaled, how responsible do you see those countries who support the apartheid regime of Israel for the murder of Sheikh Khaled Adnan?
Oh, they are very responsible. In fact, they are the truly the responsible parties. Well, one is that they established Israel to become a colonialist, system and settler colonialist regime in the heart of the Arab world and the Muslim world. They founded this regime, and they kept supporting it until today, to become the most advanced, regime in the area that possesses over 300 nuclear heads and a very advanced military and economic system. And who did this? It's France, Britain, the United States, Canada, and the Western colonialist powers, because they wanted to establish a colony that can serve their interest in the region, and that they can demonstrate their hegemony in our region. And so Israel is really a puppet of the Western colonies, and at the same time a small partner today for some of these countries. So in short, if you talk about administrative detention, for example, this is a law that Israel inherited from the British. When they say we are putting Palestinian prisoners in detention centers and in administrative detention where they have no rights, no legal rights, no rights whatsoever without charge or trial, they inherited this law from the British time when they were colonizing Palestine. And today we see the United States continuing to pump billions and billions of dollars into Israel military and economy. France and Germany are doing Israel dirty work, but against the Palestinian communities and their supporters. We see that Germany, for example, banned Al-Quds Day, banned the Day of the Prisoners, and Al-Nakba and Al-Awda rallies in Germany. They are using coercion and oppressing Palestinians and Arabs and refugees on behest of Israel. And so really on that kind of relationship between imperialism and Zionism, nothing changed whatsoever. It has become even more clear for us that we're not just fighting Israel, we are fighting this imperialist and reactionary regimes of the region. This is the enemy of the Palestinian people.
Well, Liath, the Palestinian resistance groups today have launched rockets from Gaza towards the apartheid entity after the murder of Sheikh Adnan. Where do you see now the resistance going with this? Do you think that it's going to exacerbate the situation? Or your overall assessment of things right now?
Well, just less than half an hour ago, there was more missiles fired from Gaza. We know right now, since the morning, around 30 missiles were fired from Gaza. Only four were intercepted by the Israeli air defenses, which is an indicator that either the Palestinians in the resistance of Gaza are using more advanced missiles this time, and or that there was a major failure in the quote-unquote Iron Dome. So this will continue, of course. We heard the Palestinian resistance groups stating that this is just an initial response, that there will be a retaliation of the same caliber of the assassination of Sheikh Khadr Adnan, which means that this will be a much more protracted situation. We look at what's happening in the West Bank. Ariha, or Jericho in English, has been under siege for now 9 days. People are not allowed to leave of the city of Jericho. And the blood is boiling in the streets of the West Bank. Demonstrations were out over the night in Jenin and Nablus. So more should come out in the next few hours. And I hope, of course, that the Zionists will be deterred and not drag us all into a much wider confrontation.
Well, Khaled, hunger strikes are the tactic of resistance when there's no other way out, and to bring attention to a cause that the world tries to ignore. We started in Northern Ireland and South Africa, and now in Palestine. Do you think that Sheikh Adnan's martyrdom can ignite a change in what is happening on the ground there and create a greater awareness outside of Palestine and be actually ignition for greater resistance inside of the Palestinian territories?
This is a very important question, because I think that the duties and the task that was required from the national leader, Sheikh Khadr Adnan, he have delivered them with his own soul. And so now it's up to us, the one who is still living, to turn this battle against occupation into a battle for the freedom of Palestinian prisoners, and to confront Israelis and their allies and their oppression of the Palestinian prisoners, to bring down this racist criminal law called administrative detention, where Israel can hold Palestinians in prisons in indefinite time and without trial or charge and illegal rights. We need to put the Palestinian prisoner issue into the priority of the solidarity movement with Palestine, with our own solidarity and support work, whether as Palestinians or as international movement, especially, for example, the boycott movement against Israel. It has to uphold the Palestinian prisoners as one of its priorities. Because when we talk about the Palestinian prisoners, we are really talking about the true leadership of the Palestinian National Liberation Movement. We're talking about Palestinians who are being kept in prison because Israel actually fear their presence in their villages and camps and cities. These are the people that, as we say, their word is heard by the local communities, and they are hostages. Israel is imprisoning now over 4,900 Palestinian prisoners. These are the leaders of our unions, our student movement, our woman movement, labor movement. These are the Palestinian workers and doctors and engineers are being held in Israeli prisons. And we need to also look a little bit at the Palestinian responsibility itself. Today, for example, why Khadr Adnan issue was not highlighted in the United Nations, for example. Not that I trust the United Nations, but even on that level, the reason is because the Palestinian Authority are in full control of the Palestinian institutions. They confiscate all Palestinian institutions, whether Palestinians, the PLO, or whether the Palestinian embassies, or whether Palestinian missions. It's under the full control of this class that act and behave like puppets for the right. Israelis. And so that's why it's important to liberate,
15 seconds, Khaled, sorry.
Liberate these institutions from Palestinian comprador and capitalists.
Well, thank you both for being with us. Again, almost 5,000 Palestinian prisoners in prison as we speak. Hopefully this program can go a little ways in highlighting the importance of this subject. Laif Maruf, activist and political commentator out of Beirut, and Khaled Barakat, spokesman for the Masar Badel movement out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with us. And as always, we thank you for being with us on another Spotlight.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough. نقيم الدين ولا
تتفرق فيه. مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran. كتاب
الله.
in the limelight.
Beijing and its partners reportedly hope to challenge the U.S. dominance of the global communications infrastructure. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Reuters reported, China's largest telecom firms are working on a massive undersea telecommunications cable network aimed at challenging the U.S. dominance in operating global internet infrastructure. Four people involved with the project told Reuters recently. China Telecom, China Mobile Limited, and China Unicom are in the planning stages of what is expected to be a $500 million undersea fiber optic project connecting Asia with the West Asia and Europe, the sources said. The sprawling network known as EMA, Europe, Middle East, Asia, is reportedly intended to compete with another cable system currently under construction by U.S. firm Subcom LLC called CMEWE6, that is Southeast Asia, Middle East, Western Europe 6. Chinese firm HMN Tech, formerly Huawei Marine Networks, was initially selected in 2020 to manufacture the cable for CMEWE6 by a consortium that included the Chinese telecoms now working on EMA. However, a sustained U.S. pressure campaign that included millions of dollars in training grants to foreign telecoms in return for switching their votes ultimately pushed the contract to HMN's U.S. competitor last year, despite significantly higher costs. The three Chinese telecoms have reportedly signed agreements with telecoms in France, Pakistan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, with further deals in the works elsewhere in Asia, Africa, and the West Asia region. The consortium hopes to bring EMA online by the end of 2025, the sources told Reuters. The advantages of such a project for China are obvious. One source told Reuters, a faster connection between China, Hong Kong, and the rest of the world not under U.S. control gives Beijing an insurance policy should they be cut off from U.S.-controlled networks. Washington has been campaigning for years to convince allies to exclude Chinese companies from future infrastructure projects. However, Reuters sources said they fear the plan presages a growing division of global internet infrastructure into what a researcher for military industrial think tank RAND Corporation described as a US-led internet and a Chinese-led internet ecosystem. The more the U.S. and Chinese disengage from each other in the information technology domain, the more difficult it becomes to carry out global commerce and basic functions, RAND's Timothy Heath told Reuters, warning that forcing third countries to choose between the two sides would make technologies like GPS satellites and online banking much less reliable. Also, according to Eurasian Times, the undersea cables, which carry the vast majority of the world's internet traffic, have become a key point of connection between the two global superpowers, as intelligence agencies can tap into the cables to carry out surveillance. Over 400 undersea cables carry over 95% of all international internet traffic globally, according to data from Telegeography, a Washington-based telecommunications research firm, as quoted by various reports. These data conduits, which transmit everything from emails and banking transactions to military secrets, are vulnerable to sabotage, attacks, and espionage, Reuters claimed, quoting an unnamed U.S. administration official and two security analysts. The undersea cables have become a new front in the ongoing U.S.-China tech war, became evident in February when two communications cables connecting Taiwan with its Matsu Islands were cut, disconnecting the 14,000 residents' internet, report said on March 8.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.